congratulations on your continuing leadership. And I will simply echo what Dave McAllister said, which is at Parks, we're very proud of our partnership. Parks and CES have had a longstanding, very effective partnership working on these things, particularly around Protect the Best and the tree canopy and the land acquisition strategy. So we look forward to continuing to work with you as we move forward. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think it's been illustrated today here that the Greater Green Initiative is not only about building more green infrastructure, restoring health for our watersheds, and helping nurture a burgeoning eco-roof industry. It really is about partnerships and meeting challenges and making sure that equity is a factor from the start. And I've been very heartened by all the presentation today, and I know there's a lot of interest in what we said about eco-roofs. Those are kind of teasers because we'll be coming back to you in February, I believe, with a more comprehensive briefing about the new industries that have been created, about things like the 30 points for equity in the RFP and what's going on there. But we'll save that for February. But I just want to close by thanking all our partners and thanking Danella and Dean and all the people at BES who have worked hard with other agencies and partners to help help us on some ambitious objectives. We still have a ways to go to achieve these objectives, but I think with this council support and the community support, we can get there. So thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for continuing forward and seeking to exceed the initial goals of Greater Green. I think that's fantastic and a great accomplishment. I had the opportunity, I look forward to the briefing in February. I had an opportunity when I went to Toronto to include in the business delegation a local green roof contractor, provider, material. They've got some real innovative materials that they're now selling around the world, and they got their start and their hands-on experience here. So they're a firm based in Camas, Washington, which I count as part of the greater Camas, Portland region, and they certainly do. So there's a lot of value added here that is becoming apparent as we move forward, the least of which is the social equity. And I want to congratulate Commissioner Saltzman and the Bureau for embracing that from the very get-go. It's really fantastic, and we'll show it off more in the coming months. Aye. Report accepted. We have a time certain at which we're running late on. Can you please read the item for emergency ordinance item number 1420?
Authorized change in control of the cable franchise held by Quest Broadband Services, Inc. to CenturyLink, Inc.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, and welcome to our honored guests. I'm asking the Council today to approve CenturyLink's purchase of Quest Broadband Services. This action is necessary because Quest owns a cable franchise in the City of Portland, and the action has been recommended by the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commissioner. I'll turn it over to Mary Beth Henry, the Deputy Director of the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm sure many of you have heard that CenturyLink is proposing to acquire Quest, which operates in 14 western states and is Oregon's dominant phone provider. In 2007, the City of Portland approved a cable TV franchise with Quest, which was never built. Today, we're here to ask the City Council to approve the transfer of this inactive cable TV franchise to CenturyLink. The Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission and staff feel that the prospect of competition is very important. Our neighbors in East Multnomah County and our neighbors in Washington County both enjoy competition in the cable TV arena. If CenturyLink moves forward to deploy cable TV, as it has done elsewhere, it will provide a much-needed choice for our citizens and will be good for our local economy. There's a broader discussion taking place at the state level under the jurisdiction of the Public Utility Commission concerning the telephony and broadband components of the deal. If approved by the PUC and other regulatory bodies, the new company will have nearly 1 million phone lines in Oregon. For the PUC to approve the deal, it must determine that the sale will not harm customers and to ensure that customers are not harmed, the PUC is likely to require some conditions. The PUC is expected to announce its decision in January. To present additional information about CenturyLink and its plans for the future, we have Terry Beeler, Western Region President for CenturyLink, Vicki Callen, Vice President for Broadband Development. She's the Internet Protocol TV expert. And Judy Pepler, you all know, Oregon Quest President. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are you staying on?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. No, I am not.
Why not?
After 23 years, I'm ready to do something different. Thank you.
Slacker. Just kidding. Thank you for your fantastic service. Are you going to, hopefully you're going to be able to try to stay around? You're good looking?
We'll see.
Well, if you don't know, Judy's done a fantastic job in her position as the leader of Oregon Quest, active in the community, and so I wanted to thank you for that great service.
Thank you.
You have a presentation?
Yes. Mayor Adams, my name is Terry Beeler. I'm the region president for Western Region. Members of the council, thank you for your time this morning. I've been asked to provide sort of an overview of our company, CenturyLink, what the benefits might be to the consumer base in the state of Oregon, and with that, we'll dive right in. The company overview, you know, we're a well-respected operator and acquirer of ILEC properties across the United States.
What's ILEC?
I'm sorry, incumbent local exchange carriers. My fault. I'll try not to do that again.
Right.
Our company has a track record of being a value-added local service provider. We've purchased and successfully integrated numerous regional Bell operating companies in our history. Our customer service model focuses really on empowering our local employees and our local management team to run their markets, understand their markets, live and work in those markets. We're aggressively evaluating new technologies and service all the time in order to be a stronger competitor in our telecommunications industry. This map that you see in front of you is the current CenturyLink map. These are the states we serve. These are the areas that we serve, highlighted in green. The local, the yellow lines you'll see are our is our fiber network across the United States. I do have a map later on that overlays the Quest properties on top so you can get an idea of what the new company might look like.
What are the gray areas on that map?
The gray areas are areas that we do not currently serve, that CenturyLink currently does not serve. The strategic focus of our company is to successfully complete our merger and integration of our recently purchased Embark properties, continue our laser focus on owning the broadband position in our markets, intensify our customer revenue growth and retention efforts, and invest in and develop new products and related business initiatives. The next slide is somewhat of an eye chart, but the thing that I would like for you to take away from here is we have what we call a local operating model, which means that we put leadership in the markets that we serve. Those decisions for that market are made by those people that run those markets. We have a fairly flat organization in that you'll see the chief operating officer, who is my boss, and then we have supporting groups, functional groups, the marketing group, our sales groups, our customer care groups, and our operations group. So we believe that in order to operate a market successfully, you need to be a part of that market, live in that market, understand what the challenges are in that market. Thus, the reason we have adopted the market and the model that we have. The next slide shows you the current CenturyLink model and operating regions. I'm responsible for the western region, as you can see, and the rest of the states are split up. We have five regions currently. We have 21 vice president and general managers that reside in these markets, again, pushing the decision-making process down closer to the customer. The Quest acquisition, I'll touch briefly on that. The transaction structure, it's an all-stock combination. The enterprise value is valued about $22.4 billion. The financing mechanism, there's no new financing or refinancing that's required. And then obviously we have regulatory approvals, some that we have, some that we are still waiting on. We did get the endorsement from both IBW and CWA, our local unions, to adopt the deal. So we expect still to close the deal, hopefully the first half of 2011. The new company, I told you that there was a map here that really shows the overlay, one company to the other. As you can see, we'd like to call it national breadth and local depth, which means that we have a national footprint, but we still operate our markets from with a local flavor and a local touch. You can see that Quest obviously weighted heavily in the western part of the United States. We have some properties here, so we feel like this is a pretty good fit for our companies. This will be what the new regions look like. Three of the headquarters locations have been identified and announced, three have not. So you can see, I'm sure the one that you're most interested in is the Northwest. So you'll have Idaho, Washington, Oregon, and a few customers in California that will be led by Brian Statting. Then the Southwest region you can see is Nevada, New Mexico, and Arizona. And the rest you can also take a look and look at peruse those at your leisure.
Did you say that the Northwest region location has yet to be determined?
It has not been determined at this particular point. So that one, the Southwest region, and the which one, the Midwest region, I'm sorry, have not been identified or announced yet.
So didn't I also hear you say that the decision makers would live in the community for
yes.
which they serve?
Yes.
So how would Idaho and Washington
so the
part of the market of Portland?
The regional headquarters will be announced. A regional president and a support organization will reside there. And then each of the individual markets, there will be a vice president and general manager, multiple vice presidents and general managers that will run the day-to-day operations. So,
and how is Portland identified?
Portland will have at least one vice president and general manager that will reside in this city, and that will be responsible for the day-to-day operation, minimum of one. The next slide is really just an overlay and a print of CenturyLink and Quest properties combined. As you can see, we'll be serving a majority of the state. Number of employees, a total of somewhere around 1,315, give or take. And you can look at the number of access lines will be right at 900,000, a little over 900,000. So the management team that will be put into place, that is in place, the chairman of the board is Bill Owens, who came as a Quest employee. Chief executive officer and president, Glenn Post, who is a CenturyLink CEO currently. Chief financial officer, Stuart Ewing, who is CenturyLink's current CFO. Chief operating officer, Karen Puckett, who is my boss, will remain in that position. Chris Ansell from out of Denver will run our sales organization, business, our large enterprise markets. And then the board members you can see are made up of different people from both companies. So the last slide, customer benefits. Increased capabilities for customers is the way we view it. We'll have a robust national fiber network, which really positions our company for greater customer reach, more diverse and customized product offerings, and creates a stronger data voice and long-haul competitor. We'll have expanded and enhanced consumer offerings. The likelihood of faster extended broadband deployment, enabling video via IPTV products, and increased prominence in enterprise and government broadband markets. Customer focus, again, our model is to be a part of these markets. We live, work here, understand them, and take care of our consumers in a way that I think we've proven we are certainly able to handle. Excuse me. And then the financial strength and flexibility, the merger of these two companies, acquisition of Quest, it provides for a sound capital structure and will certainly support ability to take advantage of new opportunities as they come up in the market.
So if a customer has an issue and they call center. Where is your call center located?
We have multiple call centers. All of those call centers, again, have not been identified, but obviously Quest has call centers across the United States. We have call centers across the United States. We currently have a call center in Medford, Oregon. We have call centers in multiple locations. So those decisions.
Any call centers outside of the United States?
We do outsource some. I'll let Judy speak for that. CenturyLink does not outsource outside of the United States. Quest does have some currently, and those are being evaluated.
Those are being what?
Evaluated.
Evaluated. So there's a chance they would no longer exist out of the United States under your management?
There's a chance, but again, those decisions are long, have not been decided yet, and there's lots of information that needs to be evaluated before we can make that decision determination.
I would just offer that it would, if your goal is to be community-oriented, it would be nice to have
understand
call center, at least in the western half of the hemisphere.
Trust me, I support that recommendation.
Can I ask a question just as a Quest customer? Once this is completed, how will it impact the rates that people pay here in Oregon for service?
Commissioner Fish, the rates are, we are going to continue to operate under our alternative form of regulation, and the rates will not change.
Thank you, Judy.
Where's CenturyLink headquartered?
The corporate headquarters are located in Monroe, Louisiana, and they'll continue to be located in Monroe, Louisiana.
Why not? Why not?
Have you ever been there? I can't answer that. That's the decision that was made. That's where our corporate offices have been located. That's where the company was founded a long time ago, 75, 80 years ago. So under this next acquisition, we'll continue to be located.
Well, in this climate in 2010, I'm more than happy it's in Monroe, Louisiana.
Thank you very much for coming here, especially today,
thank
for
you.
This presentation.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your presentation.
Thanks. All right, this is an emergency ordinance. Has anyone signed up to testify?
Was Vicki going to speak?
No, I was just here to answer questions.
Okay. All right.
I think we've got everybody who signed up.
Okay. Does anyone wish to testify on item emergency ordinance 1420? If not, Carly, can you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Well, I think some of my questions might have betrayed another sense I have that Mayor Adams spoke to. I'm really sorry to hear Judy leaving. She's become an integral part of the community since I've, before I was on the council, she's been very a person that I've worked with and looked to for advice in the business community. And she has been an outstanding member of our community. I'm very disappointed she's leaving. So just have to be honest with you and tell you guys have a ways to go with me.
I understand.
So Judy Lehman. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thanks again, Mr. Beeler, for coming today and for all of you for your presentation. I agree. Thank you, Judy, for all of your service to the city and exemplifying somebody who's very much a part of the community. And so we look forward to your company doing that also. I hope that you'll consider us as the headquarters. And certainly with call centers, we've got lots of great people who would do a great job for you and wonderful places to live in Portland, in the city of Portland. So we can talk about that later when we meet a little more. Thank you to the Cable Office and also the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, our citizen volunteers and our partners across the Multnomah County who have reviewed this carefully and believe it's in the best interest of the citizens of Portland that we provide this option and this competition. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to build on something that Commissioner Leonard just said. I'm going to forever call Commissioner Leonard Landslide Leonard, which will become more apparent later in the day.
We'll take it.
Something about Judy, which I'm hoping is part of the corporate culture of CenturyLink, is that in addition to her work for the company, she has been engaged in the community as the chair or board member of multiple organizations benefiting Portland and the region. And we're hoping that whoever is the vice president charged here carries on that tradition of deep engagement in our community and things that are non-work related but which benefit the broader community. And I'm also thinking, Judy, that there's a silver lining in this because I know how much you like to be on your boat. So you're going to be able to spend a little more time doing another passion. So thank you to Judy Pepler for her service, and we welcome a CenturyLink to our community. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I welcome CenturyLink, and we'll certainly approve this franchise change, but I also wanted to add my accolades to Judy Pepler, who is so identified with Quest that oftentimes, by mistake, I have called her Judy Quest. before, not to her face, but when I'm thinking, okay, Judy Quest. But Judy Pepler has been an outstanding citizen of our city, and she really takes her job seriously and the employees she oversees, but as has been said here, she's been a real outstanding member of the wider community, particularly the business community. And I, you know, just want to appreciate her support back in 2002 for the first run of the Children's Levy. At the time, the Portland Business Alliance was still in the, hadn't quite existed, so we still had the Chamber of Commerce and the Association for Portland Progress, but they were meeting jointly on legislative issues or ballot measures. And I know if it hadn't been for Judy's support of the Children's Levy going forward, it could have drowned in a sea of eternal sort of questions of why the city, not the county, and all those sorts of things. Now is not the time. All the things you hear about ballot measures. And she helped to get those organizations to endorse it. And I think that had a lot to do with its ultimate success and success in its renewal as well. So I want to thank you for that, in particular, Judy, but just thank you for your outstanding leadership. And I hope that CenturyLink will live up to that standard and that bar in terms of its commitment to our community and employees. Thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Well, welcome to Portland. We expect to see you around. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the item for non-emergency ordinance, item number 1421?
Authorize collaborative agreement between Portland Parks and Recreation and Portland Public Schools for the joint use of facilities.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to invite Board Member David Wine, Marlis Mock, Tony Magliano, and Lisa Turpel to come forward. And I have a brief introductory set of comments before we take this matter up. Today, I'd like to welcome the distinguished board member from the Portland Public Schools, David Wine, and his team to council to speak about the new strategic agreement between Portland Public Schools and Portland Parks and Recreation. One of the strongest and longest and most important relationships between the City of Portland and Portland Public Schools is with Portland Parks and Recreation. And since 1957, we've been working closely together. Portlanders depend on this close working relationship between public schools and parks. After all, we share buildings, playgrounds, tennis courts, athletic fields, and we jointly manage interdependent programs. Here are just a few examples of joint use of facilities. On the Portland Public School side, Portland Parks and Rec golf courses and swimming pools, athletic fields for PIL team practices and games, and parks adjacent to schools for school day phys ed classes and recess. On the park side, Portland Public School athletic fields for recreational team practices and some younger age games, gyms for youth basketball, Sun Community Schools. But not only do we share facilities, but we share a mission and a commitment to the health, education, and safety of our kids and families across Portland. The creation of this new collaboration agreement represents a watershed in our long working relationship. Frankly, in a climate where public trust in government is strained, to put it politely, we can offer this agreement as a model of two different governmental entities working together and working smarter. This agreement strengthens all prior agreements, consolidates all of our agreements, and establishes a new strategic management committee, excuse me, that will guide current and future ventures between our two organizations and the people we serve. Now, putting this agreement together was hard work, and I'd like to just acknowledge the people that are responsible for the successful conclusion of the agreement. From Portland Public Schools, Marlis Mock, the Community Relations Project Manager, Tony Magliano, Director of Facilities and Asset Management, Carrie Hampton, Property Manager, and a number of other senior management and legal advisors, including C.J. Sylvester. From Portland Parks and Recreation, I want to acknowledge Lisa Turple, our Workforce and Community Alliances Manager, Eileen Argentina, Parks and Recreation Services Manager, and Zaylene Nunn, the Assistant Property and Contract Manager. So it is my honor this morning to introduce my friend and our partner, Portland Public School Board Member David Wine. David, welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, Mayor Adams, members of the Council. I am thrilled to be here today to support this agreement on behalf of the school district. I have been on the school board for just over 7 years now, and one of the things that has characterized that time period is a continuing deepening and improvement of the working relationship between Portland Public Schools and the City of Portland. It's been a positive development on a number of fronts, and this is just the latest manifestation of us working together for the betterment of the citizens of Portland. The history of collaboration that Commissioner Fish has outlined is a testament to the importance and the value of working closely together. Schools and parks have co-located facilities since the first school building boom of the 1920s, and to the extent that there is any kind of school building boom in the early part of the 21st century, it's important that we work together to better serve children and families in Portland. On a personal note, I was thinking as I came up here today, at the risk of straining a metaphor, today happens to be my 20th wedding anniversary, and so the idea of thoughts of collaboration, partnership, and improving relationships are very much at the front of my mind, and whilst I don't want to strain that metaphor too much, I do think that the closer working relationship between parks and the school district, the positive aspects of that mirror the positive aspects of a good marriage, so I'll leave the metaphor at that. I think that the key opportunity that this really provides is for both of our jurisdictions to work together proactively on issues that are of importance to children and families in Portland, and not just on an ad hoc basis and not just when we need to, but to be thoughtful, intentional, deliberate, and innovative about how we use our facilities, your facilities, and what are really all our facilities. And we do that, as I say, for the betterment of the children and families in Portland Public Schools jurisdiction and the City of Portland. So the Board of Education unanimously approved this collaboration agreement last week, which in the current environment is testament to how much we value this, because we don't always approve things unanimously, but we were unanimous in our support and endorsement of that, and I heartily recommend it for your approval as well.
Thank you, David. Do either members of your team want to add anything? We thank you both for joining us. Lisa, would you like to add a remark? So, Mayor, are there questions or comments from our colleagues?
This is a non-emergency, but any discussion?
I just have a quick question. I think I know the answer. Why is this agreement just with Portland Public rather than with Park Rose and David Douglas and the properties of Riverdale and other districts that are in Portland?
This agreement is intended just to consolidate all of our existing agreements with one school district and does not preclude us from entering into the same kind of agreement with other school districts. Each district has a unique set of needs and characteristics, and I can tell you that it was a big enough challenge just to resolve the issues with one district, but it is our expectation to have similar agreements with the other four districts within our city.
Thank you.
I would also observe there's a different dynamic with the other school districts, given the precipitous decline in enrollment in Portland Public Schools, and what you find, I'm sure, are not necessarily welcome surplus properties versus, for an example, David Douglas that has had an explosive growth in students. And so there's probably a much greater opportunity for this kind of a shared agreement than there might be with other districts.
I think that's probably true, although I'm happy to clarify that the enrollment in Portland Public Schools has leveled off and actually increased in the last couple of years. And I also think there's a difference in the size of the organization. If you're a school district with one high school and a handful of other schools, then formal collaboration is not as necessary as it is when you're much larger, and so it's easier to work together when things aren't as complicated. But I can certainly understand the value of similar agreements with other school districts.
Mm-hmm. I like this one in particular because it looks like it establishes a foundation that you don't then have to continually get intergovernmental agreements and other payments going back and forth. This will be more efficient and sets the stage. So thank you very much for all of your work.
Thank you very much.
I'd just like to add my support for this approach, a comprehensive agreement. But since I have a school board member here, I did want to not only wish you happy anniversary, but I'm just curious, maybe you could update us all on what the thinking is of the board and the superintendent about the Marshall High School property, particularly any discussions with David Douglas about perhaps Marshall filling a role in relieving its overcrowding at its high school. Just in general, if you've even had a chance to sort of think out, if you want to share anything with us, you don't have to, but thought I'd ask you since you're here.
So the primary focus at the moment vis-a-vis Marshall is on a robust and successful transition plan for the students and staff currently attending schools on the Marshall campus. The superintendent is about to announce a proposal for capital activity for the school district, and we will be very, very thoughtful and very careful in what use we put to the Marshall campus right now. There are some programs that will continue to operate on the campus. We have had, as a district, had some conversations with David Douglas about their possible interest, and at this point, they've indicated that for financial reasons, they're not interested in the use of that or a deeper partnership vis-a-vis that building. But I think we will continue to be as innovative, imaginative, and flexible in the way that we approach that as we can be.
If I can just amplify that, because something that a number of us have discussed, David, it does fall within an urban renewal district. And to the extent there's a way, the city has in the past indicated its desire to help David Douglas in some way, whether it's through a satellite district or some other vehicle. As the Parks Commissioner, we're interested in the site for potentially siting a ball field that could be used for the community, regardless of which district actually is leasing the space. So there might be a creative model of collaboration here between you where the city could help with some of the financial costs, but I think that's something that we'd be very interested in discussing. I would like to just, because we're not going to have you here next week, acknowledge that the Strategic Management Committee component of this agreement is a very important piece because it'll allow us to get out front of problems as they develop. And we have a process for resolving the myriad issues that come up in a complex relationship like this. And I also, for the benefit of my colleagues, want to just acknowledge that increasingly this council has been less interested in who has the primary responsibility for delivering a service and more interested in figuring out how we can partner to do the job better. And there's a whole host of things we're working with the county on, which are in effect revisiting Resolution A. And responsibilities that have been established historically, law enforcement, homeless services, mental health services, a whole host of things where this body is providing funding and leadership on things that are technically county responsibilities, but we acknowledge are community concerns. And I think in that spirit, I want to acknowledge that the council has made investments in ball fields, which are either on school property or adjacent to school property, which are going to have a tremendous impact on the lives of our kids. And that includes Roosevelt, Buckman. We've made investments in Park Rose and soon Grant. In addition, the last two community gardens that the city invested in were at Madison and Vestal. So two schools along 82nd Street that have had a tremendous benefit to schools' facilities and to the surrounding neighborhood. And I think that's the model that we're going to see more of, how we can work together to advance the interests of the kids that you serve, recognizing that each of us have strengths we can bring to the table. So we really appreciate your hard work in getting this agreement concluded. It was not easy, and it required a lot of legal work, a lot of conversation. And Lisa, thank you for your patience and your diligence in shepherding this to a satisfactory conclusion.
It was a pleasure.
So I just wanted to add, thank you for that insight. But also, I just wanted to thank you and the members of the school board and the superintendent. You have very tough jobs, and I appreciate you getting the job done. So I just appreciate all your hard work. And thank you, Lisa, and the rest of Parks for this.
And we're in discussions with the superintendent around a number of issues, including facilities and programs and tax increment and the other four superintendents in the city as well. So a lot of moving parts, as many of them moving forward as we can push. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Moves to a second reading next week unless there's somebody here that wishes to testify. All right, moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read items 14, 22, 23, and 24?
1422, ratify a successor labor agreement with the District Council of Trade Unions for terms and conditions of employment of represented employees in the bargaining unit. 1423, authorize a letter of agreement with Laborers Local Union 483, amending the July 1, 2010 to June 30, 2013 recreation labor agreement between the parties. And 1424, authorize the Friday after Thanksgiving as a paid holiday for non-represented employees consistent with the city's negotiated agreements with represented employees' unions.
Welcome back.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Yvonne Decker, and I'm the director for the Bureau of Human Resources. The first agenda item, 1422, is the ratification of the DCTU contract tentative agreement by the City Council. The DCTU did ratify the tentative agreement with their members on the 29th of October. At the table with me is Liz Waddle, who acted as our chief spokesperson during regular negotiations, and Julia Getchell, who was the second chair and picked up the slack when Liz wasn't there. And I think they made a very good team for the city. We actually bargained with this unit for approximately 260 days in order to try to get a successor agreement before we entered into the dispute resolution phase. During that time, we actually, Liz and Julia, were actually able to get about 13 TAs over the whole contract. We did go into mediation on September 23rd, and we actually had three mediation days, and we actually signed the tentative agreement with the DCTU on October 5th, about 6 in the morning. I think the thing that that the DCTU and the city should be commended for is the fact that the mediator actually announced to us around 10:30 that he would be leaving at midnight, and we chose to actually stay at the table and not let this go to see if we could get a tentative agreement. Even though the mediator was not able to continue with us, and we were able to do so. I think that has been a good step in building some trust and hopefully helping us to establish a new relationship between the city and the DCTU. Some of the highlights of the agreement are: this is a three-year agreement. There's a zero COLA increase in the first year of the agreement, and a floor of 1% and a ceiling of 5% in years 2 and 3. We were able to actually accomplish a lot. We had some pretty important and critical issues that we were working with or negotiating over for both the union as well as the city. On the job security, which is the contracting out article, we were able to reach agreement whereby work that has been previously contracted out, work that is proprietary, and work that is under warranty, that we agreed upon that the city will continue to do that, but that we will actually provide notice and support, to the DCTU on a quarterly basis, and we worked out a notice criteria that we both could live with and that we I think is good for both parties.
So items we have under warranty, I think parking meters was one of the items, but anything that's like that that has a as part of its maintenance agreement or warranty agreement that we use that company's service technicians.
Correct.
Is preserved. We can
yes.
do that.
Yes, but we will give notice, you know, to the union, and I think that's the right thing to do. And but we will continue to honor those warranties. Okay. On the Article 9, which is the overtime issue, we did preserve the 8-hour day. When we are looking at work that is mandatory overtime, we will continue to follow the contract on the status quo. However, if work is voluntary or what we call noticed, that employees get at least a 24-hour notice and can sign up for the overtime, that they will receive that overtime after they've worked 40 hours, not including protected sick leave. Okay. We actually, under Schedule A, the city had not increased its premium since 1984. So we moved from 40 cents premiums throughout the contract to 80 cent premiums. And we added some additional premiums that I feel are mutually beneficial to both the city and the union. The parties agreed to add a 3% step to the salary range of certain classifications, which will impact approximately 44% of the DCTU bargaining unit employees, and that will be implemented July 1 of 2012, and it will be granted on each employee's individual anniversary dates, mitigating the costs for the city. Most of these classifications were classifications where we were under market, and there was a couple where traditionally, they had not grown and we had lost position in the market. And those are classifications where employees do not receive premiums and they've lost and continue to slide within the market. And so we included those also. On Article 11, which is working out of class, the parties agreed that if employees, DCTU employees, work less than an hour, they would only be paid for an hour of work out of class. And that's a departure from any time that they spent working out of class, they would be paid 4 hours. And so what we found in our with most of the bureaus is that employees who worked an hour usually worked up to 4 hours, but there was a large number of people who didn't work, meet that hour threshold, and so the union agreed that they should only be paid for an hour. I think this is going to be a tremendous savings for the city. I think on the overtime change, the city will be able to save somewhere between $500,000 and $600,000 a year. But I really believe that the work out of class will be a larger savings for the city. We did give this unit the day after Thanksgiving. And I really believe that those are the major issues. We did have some issues as far as reporting to work, and that is when people are being called back to work. We had the city's practice was all over the board, and so we actually solidified that. And so when the employee receives the phone call, that's when their pay begins and they would report to work. And then when they leave work is when their pay ends. So I think that those are most of the major changes in the contract. We did have a lot of housekeeping and cleaning up, and so I believe that this is a very strong agreement and workable agreement for both parties, and I recommend that council adopts or ratifies this agreement.
So questions from council?
To clarify, the day after Thanksgiving being a holiday was in exchange for not doing the 0.7% COLA increase that otherwise the employees would have been entitled to. Do we know the overall savings for not paying that 0.7 10% increase?
Citywide, over all of our bargaining units, Commissioner, is about $10 million. And then I believe that probably for this particular unit, that probably equates to close to three.
And $10 million citywide is a significant savings. How much will giving the extra holiday cost the city?
Zero.
Thank you.
Other discussion with council?
How does giving an extra holiday equal zero?
Well, we will pay. We pay employees if they are on vacation or if they have a holiday or if they work. And so their salary doesn't increase by giving them the day after Thanksgiving. If they had taken vacation time, it's the same pay, or if they had reported to work, it's the same time. So there's no additional personnel cost for the city in order to give the day after Thanksgiving.
There is a little bit, though, in the public safety bureaus, the 24-hour bureaus, where instead of giving the extra day off, we're doing extra premium pay. Is that correct? Like in the Bureau of Emergency Communications and police?
Well, I don't believe that we did. Done with police.
Right.
So we don't know what we're going to do there just yet. But I believe that what we did in fire for the 52-hour week people, we did not give the day. We did not extend this. For their 40-hour week people, we did, because they don't have to worry about backfill. For BOEC, we actually, it becomes more like a floating holiday so that, because it's a 24-hour operation and we have to keep going. And so, actually, no, we didn't do a floating holiday. We did a premium because we actually do want to keep people working.
It's still the $10 million savings greatly outweighs the cost.
Correct. But there is no cost for the other city employees.
Any other? Yep.
Well, I was, despite whether it has a net zero cost to us or not, the extra holiday day after Thanksgiving, well practiced by many employers, public and private alike, and I know it's one of the days that probably is least effective when we are working in city government, but nevertheless, that's kind of been sort of one of the lightning rods that the public reacts viscerally to. So I'm curious, in your own words, if you could just tell us, and I think you've already said it in your formal statement, but tell us, what is it about this agreement that makes it worth granting the extra holiday?
I believe that the union made quite a few major concessions in order to help the city save money. And that moves us toward being able to manage our personnel costs, which is about 60-70% of our overall budget. The savings that the extra holiday won't cost the city anything, but the savings that you gain with concessions over on overtime and the concessions that the monies that you save with concessions on work out of class are, as well as zero COLA, definitely far outweighs, granting an extra holiday.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And I want to thank you for your great work, your creativity and persistence. So thank you. Has anyone signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Does anyone wish to testify on these matters, 14, 22, 23, 24? All right, these are emergency ordinances. Can you please call the roll?
Mayor, I'm sorry, I may have missed it. Was there there's an amendment sheet that went
yes.
around. Has that been moved yet?
Okay, move the amendment, Exhibit A.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Please call the vote on the amendment. Thank you.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Amendment is approved. Let's proceed with the vote on 1422.
1422... is amending.
We already did it. We're done.
We're voting.
No.
We're voting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're all good.
I'm sorry.
Appreciate
You're
it.
Right.
No.
I was jumping to 23.
Yeah.
Leonard.
I do want to acknowledge the very hard work both sides brought to the table, Yvonne Decker, her staff, and Ken Allen and his staff to reach truly a compromise. It was not as obvious as it might appear now that one could be achieved, given the issues at hand. So having done this kind of work in a prior life, I understand how stressful and difficult and time-consuming it is, and it requires a lot of patience. So I appreciate all the work that you've done. Aye.
Fritz.
Yes, thank you to all the negotiators from Human Resources and from the labor unions for this contract. It was definitely a lot of discussion, and I am pleased to hear that you did go through the night without the mediator to get to this agreement. Shows that there's a level of trust that had been developed over the course of the process that you all thought you could do it, and indeed you did. It's worth emphasizing that the cost of living agreements, which are the same as the other in the other settled contracts, they run for 3 years, and not doing the cost of living increase for the year that we're currently in saves $10 million. That is a significant savings for the taxpayers. Another of the pieces that I'm particularly glad to see is that a market survey will be completed to determine where compensation is below market, and that'll be used in the next round of bargaining. As we conduct that study, I believe we must factor in private sector salaries as well. Our taxpayers expect us to pay public employees commensurate with the private sector whenever possible, and I think we need to make effort to check on what those market factors are. I'm particularly pleased in the gain in sick time and overtime. That was very hard negotiated. We've gotten to the place where it's common sense that, yes, if you work more than 8 hours in a day, or if you're required to work overtime, then you get paid overtime. If you haven't worked a full week, including the holiday pay and vacation pay and other compensation that people are entitled to, then indeed you need to work 40 hours before you get the overtime. And I'm very pleased to get that step. So thank you to everybody who was involved in this. Aye.
Fish.
I want to begin by just acknowledging all of the represented and non-represented employees who serve our city. We are very fortunate to have hardworking, dedicated people who are working in very challenging times. And frankly, as we keep trimming our budgets, we are in effect asking people to do more with fewer resources. And I want to just acknowledge that we appreciate the hard work and effort. We are blessed to have a very dedicated workforce. And under this agreement, in my view, we have struck a balance that recognizes that we both have to make shared sacrifice during tough times, but that we also want to have fairness in how the relationship moves forward. This would not have been possible, though, without a lot of dialogue. Commissioner Leonard alluded to, very diplomatically, some of the challenges of getting to the end. But it is a testament to the fact that people stayed at it and had dialogue at the table. And it starts, Yvonne, on our side with you and your team, and appreciate the way that you kept the council together as we developed our priorities and made sure that those priorities stayed on the table through the very end. And it also, I'd like to acknowledge Ken Allen and James Hester and Carol Stalky and Buzz Beadle and others who have worked so hard on behalf of the represented workforce to represent their best efforts and to fight for fairness on their side. And I think this balanced agreement with the shared sacrifice is a testament to two sides in good faith trying to get to the right outcome. And it allows us during very perilous times to continue to provide a high level of services to the public while also treating our employees fairly. So I thank everyone for their hard work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, negotiations are give and take, and learning to live with what works for all sides. And I want to thank our bargaining team, Yvonne, Liz, Julia. I know Anna Canwit probably had something to do with it, too, and others. But thank you, and also thank the members of the DCTU bargaining team. What really gets my yes vote on this is the, in exchange for the day after Thanksgiving being a paid holiday, is the reforms to the overtime. When I first learned that we are paying people overtime based on 40 hours paid versus 40 hours worked in a week, and it was costing us some $3 to $4 million a year to do that, that had to change. And I made my marker early in that. That was a litmus for me to support this agreement. And indeed, while we didn't get everything, we did in the practice of using sick time towards overtime, counting towards, or sick time counting towards a 40-hour week and then qualifying for overtime. As you said, that'll save us $600,000 a year. It's not the whole enchilada, but it's a start. and I think it's a reform that is consistent with what the public expects. So I want to thank both sides for that agreement, and I'm pleased to support this agreement. Aye.
Adams.
Well, having thanked our great team, I want to also thank Carol, James, Ken, Cherry, Buzz, and everyone on the labor side of our partnership. The opportunity to, with this agreement, to save $10 million, around $10 million a year going forward is significant. It has helped close our budget gap. And the other reforms that have been mentioned by my colleagues are equally important. It wouldn't have come about without your creativity and your persistence as well. So I want to thank you for that and look forward to working with you all moving ahead. Aye. Please call the vote for the next item.
1423.
Hi, everybody. Where are you from? Really? I hear the kids from that school are the smartest in the whole state. Is that true?
Yeah.
I thought so. Well, welcome to the Portland City Council. We're glad you're here. Study hard, okay? All right.
1423, Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
This is the recreation contract was our first one settled and had a Me Too clause in it. So I want to express my appreciation to Labor's 483 for setting us on the right course early in the negotiations with all of our unions, and particularly Richard Beadle, who epitomizes the good-hearted person who negotiates with us in good faith and advocates very clearly on behalf of his members. Thanks again to the Human Resources team for your work on this contract. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Zaltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Can you please read, I'm sorry, please call the vote for emergency ordinance item number 1424.
There is one clarification that I need to make on that particular ordinance, and that is as it relates to parking enforcement recognized holiday issue. Title 16 of the city code lists the official city holidays that exist during which parking is free. Although we've negotiated the day after Thanksgiving as an additional holiday for all of our employees, the fourth Friday in November will not be a recognized holiday, and therefore parking enforcement officers will work the day after Thanksgiving and will receive a deferred holiday. And so I just want council to understand that that part of your code has not changed with the changes here.
Please call the vote. Thank you.
Leonard?
Well, that's just too bad. Be nice if they weren't around the day after Black Friday. We're downtown shopping.
Well, council can change the
call. All right.
Thank you. We might actually want to clarify that because I think that's going to cause confusion for citizens and not knowing whether that is a holiday or not a holiday.
It is not a holiday.
Right. So for this year, for clarity,
it is not.
Plug the meters. It's not a holiday. It's not a parking meter holiday. But what this one does is to be fair and equitable to our non-represented employees. And Commissioner Fish made his usual eloquent speech about our public employees. And it's
word for long.
I am amazed. I had always been very impressed as a community organizer at how helpful city staff have been. And my nearly 2 years as a city commissioner, I am even more impressed and grateful for the work that all of our city employees do, whether represented or unrepresented. And so I'm very pleased to support this one. Aye.
Fish?
To my friend Randy, I would simply say that if you rode your bike downtown to shop rather than your Hummer, you wouldn't have to worry about the parking fees that you incurred.
I drive a Hummer as often as you ride a bike.
Oh, nice.
Your vote, sir?
He wins
a ballot measure. He's for Carla. He wins a ballot measure.
He might have edged ahead on that one. He might have to rally this afternoon.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Did I read you're now up by 600 and some votes? So you're getting cocky, huh?
685 votes.
So. Congratulations so far. The reason why we don't want free parking the day after Thanksgiving is it means that someone can park in a city space all day long, and that has the potential to hurt downtown shop.
So
downtown stores.
If I could just clarify my point to that, I wasn't actually suggesting we make it free. I just was suggesting we not have anybody enforce it.
I don't even know.